Hi, I'm Sophia Rowe, chef and wellness enthusiast. Did you know that nearly 340,000, or one in five, New York City children rely on soup kitchens and food pantries to eat, especially during the summer months when school is out? The folks over at Food Bank for New York City want you to know that unlike school, hunger doesn't take a break. Help them end child hunger by providing meals to families and children in need during those challenging summer months. Visit foodbanknyc.org to learn how you can volunteer, spread the word, and more.
Boys and girls are on fire. Boys and girls are on fire. Whole world's chicken, breaking, baby, and we're on fire.
Hi, Bomb Squad. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Each week, we talk to the most inspiring women in and around the world of food. Let's thank today's sponsors, Le Cordon Bleu, the world's most prestigious culinary schools, and Traeger Grills. Now that it's grilling season, I'm sure you all want to get outside and grilling. It's time for some housekeeping. The next stop on the Radio Cherry Bomb Food for Thought Tour is Portland, Maine, on Monday, July 22nd. Join us for a special live episode that we'll be recording at the Press Hotel. You can hear from some of the women changing the area's food scene, enjoy snacks, drinks, great networking, and more. Tickets are on sale right now at cherrybomb.com. If you don't live in Portland, Maine, tell your friends who do. Thank you to Kerrygold for supporting our tour. We love your butter and your cheese. Tickets are also on sale for some of our second half dates. So be sure to swing by cherrybomb.com and you can find tickets for Columbus, Ohio, Kansas City, Missouri, and Asheville, North Carolina. I'm so thrilled to see your cone-only pictures on Instagram. Thank you for that. Whether you are rocking a rocky road or going for a seasonal sorbet, it's always smart to skip the cup, skip the spoon, and go for a sustainable and edible vessel for your favorite frozen treats. That would be a cone, in case you're wondering. Our cone-only campaign is in partnership with the Surfrider chapters of Long Island and New York City. Let's make this the most sustainable summer yet. Hashtag cone only. Speaking of desserts, on today's episode, we're sitting down with Michelle Hernandez, the owner of Le Dee Set, a San Francisco-based patisserie. Michelle specializes in pastries and confections inspired by nature, and she is known for her nougat, as Michelle likes to say, because she's fancy and studied in France. You probably know it as nougat, which doesn't sound as lovely. Anyway, Michelle has had a fascinating career from startup to corporate fashion to food. Stay tuned for our conversation. We'll be right back after this word from Traeger Grills.
Hi, Bomb Squad. I'm Amanda Haas, cookbook author and Traeger Grills ambassador. There's so much you can do on a Traeger wood-fired grill. I've baked my gluten-free coconut brownie bites. I've roasted cauliflower with Parmesan garlic butter. And I've even grilled my Thanksgiving turkey. Traeger's wood-fired grills provide the superior flavor you can't get with traditional gas or charcoal grilling. So get outdoors and get baking, grilling, smoking, braising, and more. Try it on a Traeger, and you'll understand why I love my Traeger grill as much as I do. Visit TraegerGrills.com.
Let's start with the beginning. Where did you grow up?
So I'm a Bay Area native, but I moved to Arizona when I was six. I lived in the desert. It wasn't diverse at all. I was coming from California, where I saw a lot of different kinds of people. And I remember my parents were so sad. It was me and my two other sisters, and we would constantly tell them, like, when are we going home? But I don't know that I appreciated the desert landscape as I appreciate now, like the gorgeous plants that come out of there, the beauty, the serenity of it all.
So you're one of three girls?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where are you in the lineup?
I'm in the middle.
You're the middle?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot can be said about the middle child, I think.
So who cooked at home?
Interestingly enough, my mom cooked every meal until I started cooking, which was very, like, early. I was always interested in cooking and always interested in any recipe that I could find. It didn't matter what cookbook it was, because I just got a recipe and I would cook from it.
What age are you talking about?
I got an Easy Bake oven when I was five as a birthday gift, and was thrilled beyond belief. But my mom really cooked. She learned from her mom. And a lot of, my mom is from Guam, She was born in the Philippines, then they moved to Guam, and she ate a lot of fish and vegetables, but we didn't necessarily eat the same food that she ate. So it was always kind of like she had her food, and then my dad is Mexican, and so we ate a lot of Mexican food and a lot of American food too, but there was always kind of that differentiation, which is really interesting now that I look back at it, kind of combining like all of these cultures. And now when I think about the food, I was like, that's my favorite food, is like, I'm pescatarian. It's like fish and vegetables, fresh things. Now I appreciate it a lot more, and you know, everyone eats together. But usually when I go home, I'm cooking.
So you went to Berkeley.
I went to Berkeley.
I love that campus.
It's so...
Those redwood trees. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. The old buildings.
Yeah.
What did you study?
I studied psychology, and I have a minor in peace and conflict studies.
Wow. Why did you study that?
Well, psychology, I originally got there and was like, I'm going to be pre-med. I just didn't have the idea. I thought if I couldn't be a chef and couldn't go to culinary school, which I'd asked my parents. When I was 16, I presented my parents with the idea of going to culinary school. There was a school in San Francisco that's no longer there. I think it was called California Culinary Academy. And like, I brought the papers to them, I remember, and I was like, I'm going to apply. And they were like, no. I was like, okay. They're like, you need to get a traditional education. My parents were very, very, like, they did everything to send us to good schools. I mean, my mom was working, my dad was working so much to send us all to a private all-girls Catholic school in Phoenix, and just to really give us the best education that they could. And so they were not about to not continue that, which I am so grateful for, because I learned so much. I mean...
So you're at the school and you decide you want to be a chef in high school.
So what's interesting is Lidicette means 17 in French, and it's just a very auspicious number for me. It just keeps coming up. And what I usually tell people, they always ask like, why 17? And I say, well, I lived and I worked in the 17th arrondissement in Paris. And that's the short answer. But the real answer is both my parents were born on the 17th months of their... So my mom was born on October 17th, my dad, January 17th. Both my grandparents were born in 1917. I was technically born at 9/18. That's what the paper says, but I think it's 9/17. They called it wrong. And then when I was 17 and I was about to graduate, the school had us write, as graduating seniors, letters to ourselves. And then they were going to give it to us at our 10-year reunion. And I wrote this letter. I got it after 10 years. And there was a line in it that says, I hope you're doing well. I hope you're living all of your dreams and you've really been successful. Did you become a chef and follow your dream, or did you go kind of a traditional path? And
that's remarkable.
When I went to Paris, I took that letter with me.
So you knew at the age of 17 that you wanted to be a chef. Who was in your life, or who were your role models? What were you seeing that you knew that was a job, a possible career path?
I was like such a PBS little nerd, cooking nerd. And all of the great programs were on there. I mean, Julie Chow was on there, Jacques Pepin. I was watching like Yan Can Cook, like anything that was on TV around food. And it was really just PBS at the time. In high school, there was great chefs that you could kind of get like on cable, and they would show these French chefs doing demos of things in a real like Michelin kitchen and they're wearing toques and stuff. It was very like unattainable.
The tall hats,
which I had to wear in one of the restaurants, and I would always like, right before service, I would be like, oh my God, where's my toque? I can't find it. I could never find it.
All right. So back to Berkeley. So yes. You graduate.
Yes. I graduate.
What did you do after college?
I graduated in 2000, but in the middle of it, I had a lot of jobs. I'm always like working and interested. Because I was pre-med for like the first 2 years, one of the big things to do was get a job in a lab. Like if you could get a job in a lab, that meant you it was good for your resume for applying for school. And it was very hard. So I ended up getting a job at the USDA Plant Genetics Lab. They were coding all of this DNA. And that was amazing. Like I loved being in a lab setting. They're essentially doing recipes, but in a very technical way. I learned to extract DNA and use a centrifuge. All stuff that I do now, like their lab work and their technique, I use in it looks like a little lab when I'm making the nougat for sure. I have like all of, you know, like a temperature gun. I have another kind of temperature, like sugar refractor, all of those things.
So you were at the lab.
I was at the lab.
Did you have any food jobs in college?
I actually didn't have any food jobs, but what I ended up doing is in school, it was during the first wave of the dot-com world, and I wanted another job, but I was working, I was doing so much work at school that I needed something where I could do it from Cal. And one of my sister's friends was starting this company, and I was like, you know what? She was like, maybe they'll give you a job. I was like, I'll do anything. I'll come in. I can like, you know, like clean up. I can organize anything. I didn't know what it was. The company ended up being Evite, which is, which is one of the, And so I just was very like eager to just have a job and help them out. And so I was like the third employee there. And I worked from home and I was working on a concept. They were like, do all the research for like everything in the world and like set the categories up. So if it's sports, like what goes under sports, soccer and baseball and volleyball. And I was like, what am I doing? So I did all this work and that actually was the part of search engine optimization. And I didn't know what I was doing, and the product that ended up working for them was Evite. And so I worked for them and started my marketing career, actually. Started as an intern. And
accidentally.
Then, accidentally. I didn't know what it was. And so I was one of the first people to ever do essentially what is digital marketing now.
Did you get stock?
I did have stock, which is one of the, I had options, which is one of the reasons that they had asked me, like, you should leave school. I mean, you can imagine, like, what I was, like, scared to talk to my parents about that. Like, there was no blueprint for what that looked like. So now everyone would be like, yeah, I'm leaving school, like, obviously. But that had never happened before. Millionaires had never been made overnight. So it was a very, I was like, why? The founder was like, you should leave school. And I was like, why would I leave school? And he's like, I think you should leave school. And I was like, I will unenroll for one semester, but I really want to graduate in 2000. And he's like, okay, do that. So I was there full time and it was amazing. I learned so much. And then I was like, I have to go back to school. Now I have to make up the time in order for me to graduate. So I just took all these classes all at once.
It sounds so bomb squad, doesn't it? It's like, why have one job when I can have two or three jobs?
Yeah.
Why take one class?
Do everything. Yeah. And I was working full time. I ended up getting straight A's that semester because I just had so much and I was like so focused and I graduated. I found out the day that they sold the company, I was in the library on the computer and I read something and I was like, oh, shit, what happens to me? And they were super gracious. Like, I actually was one of the few who like stayed on so I could transition out as I was graduating. So I had a job because then the recession hit. The bubble burst and people were out of jobs. San Francisco, people were leaving San Francisco. It was that first wave. And that was a big thing. I mean, now when I look back at it, like those launch parties, that like living a high life, I never wanted to, like, I would go, like, people would be like, you should come to the parties. And I was like, I want to go back to Berkeley and hang out with my friends who are my age. Like, these people are like 25. Why do I want to hang out with them? And now I'm like, oh, it probably was amazing. And I went to some of them, but, you know, it was just an interesting time. And now to see it happen all again, like this year, there's 9 major IPOs and most of them are happening in San Francisco. So there's going to be it's really changing. There's going to be like millionaires overnight, more than there already are.
How that's affecting you and everybody else trying to find employees. Okay, so we have to get up to the Gap.
Yes, sorry.
When did you wind up at the Gap?
So I ended up, one of my friends was working at the Gap. I didn't necessarily want to end up in fashion, but because I had a good like digital marketing resume, again, it wasn't called that before because there was no term for that. I think I set my resume, they called me, Gap called me. And I had a friend who was already there and she was like, it's really good, like a really good culture. You should come over. So I went over and had an amazing time. I learned so much. The brand I was at Old Navy and I started in the online division and it was just like, I mean, such a huge time. I mean, I ended up being in charge of all the site marketing. So when you like go to oldnavy.com, that's the work that I did. I ran their email program at one point. Then I went over to Gap Online US. And then I finished at Gap Europe. But, you know, it's such a company that you like help with other brands. So like just being able to understand how to launch a business with a lot of money is very different from launching your own business.
It's so interesting because I would imagine some of our younger listeners don't realize how significant the gap was back then and how significant the gap was to San Francisco.
Absolutely.
Was it the Fisher family?
The Fisher family.
Founders?
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the most important companies in San Francisco pre-Silicon Valley and all the tech companies. And they were the ones donating so much money to the museums.
The art. A lot of the modern art that you see like in the MoMA or just even around is the Fisher family.
So how long were you at the Gap?
I was there for the first time for about 5 years and had such a great experience. And the whole time I was at Gap, I was saving money to go to Cordon Bleu.
So you never gave up on the dream?
No. And the whole time I was taking French classes. So I was living in San Francisco and then I would drive to Piedmont in Oakland, so across the bridge, and take classes from like 6:30 to 9:30 at night. And then, I did that for a long time. And then I did self-study and then found another school in San Francisco. And I would just constantly do that. But no one really knew that when I was at work. I just did my work and I loved it, learned a lot about marketing and running a business. But the whole time I was studying and getting ready.
But were you baking and cooking on the side as well?
Only for myself.
Okay.
No, for nobody else.
The one bringing all the food into the office?
No, I wasn't bringing the food, but I was definitely baking and like doing big dinners for my friends. And I loved that. But really just kind of always like planning and getting ready to go. And
what was the goal? So in the back of your head, you're thinking, okay, I'm doing this, I'm saving money, I want to go to culinary school, I'm studying French. Was the goal to be a working chef, to own your own place? Did you have an end goal?
So what's very interesting is when I look back at that, I'm like, what was that goal? Like, I just knew I had to get there and then see what happens, which is not great. I had always thought, if I can come back and work at Chez Panisse, like, because that's, I mean, to me, that was the icon. I was in Berkeley. That would be amazing. And I'm like, what can I do to do that? But other than that, I didn't really think I'm going to start a bakery. It wasn't that. And honestly, when I went into my director's office to tell her, I'm leaving and I'm gonna give you a lot of time. I think I gave, maybe it's like a month and a half, but I'm going to move out of the country. And that's it. And she was so shocked. And she was like, You're actually the next in line to be the director. Did you know that? And I was like, no, but I already like got accepted and the money's been paid. So I'm going to France.
So you go to Le Cordon Bleu.
I go to Le Cordon Bleu.
And you were at the old Le Cordon Bleu. It's so fancy now.
Yes,
I've seen. Fancy new modern building.
I have seen photos. I haven't been to the new location. I was in the original location with all the original equipment doing everything by hand.
That's exciting. Like Julia Child went to that one. There was a lot of history at that one.
Yeah, a ton of people have gone through there. Like Jada has gone through there. I mean, just the most amazing, amazing chefs. And you can tell it, I mean, everybody learns there. And it really is a great program, but you can get so much more out of it if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's like life.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
So how does it work? So you take classes. Are you expected to go get jobs and local restaurants or
no. You have the opportunity to get to have a stage afterwards.
Tell us what a stage
is. A stage is I think at the schools here it's called an internship. I mean, I think it's an internship, but I don't know if there's any like differences. But in those stages you're learning. Like your goal should be to learn as much as possible, because one of the great things is if you do well in school and you like place well. So there's a bit of competition starts pretty early, like at school. It's all very friendly, but then they do a ranking. It's like top five. And it also helps you get into a good stage. So if you wanted to go to, there's a couple of things, like you want your chefs to know that you're a good student and they're like watching you all the time and you're constantly getting graded and they're constantly telling you like pas bon and like it's not good and like what are you doing?
Pas bon.
Yeah.
It's rough. You worked at some major places. Name drop a little for us.
Oh, so I trained at Joël Robuchon, which was amazing. And that's one of the places they will only send you if you speak French. Because it's too hard. Like the working, it's too fast. And it's definitely, you need to, like, you'll get into better places if you speak French. So they had a restaurant called Le Table de Robuchon before. It was two Michelin star restaurant, and I would say I learned the most there. It is very rigorous, but the chefs there really are so talented.
How were you treated in the kitchen?
So that kitchen was very interesting. The executive chef on the savory side is extremely, I mean, anybody who has worked for Joël Robuchon, it's extremely exacting. If the recipe calls for only this many dots on a plate, it's that many dots on the plate. There's no creative. Yet he was very kind. The like yelling and what you hear about, he particularly was not like that. And I think while it's still like rigid and there's rules, I think you can learn a lot about that from that, even though it's like a super important restaurant and is very high end. And then on the pastry side, the head chef is Chef Francois. And then there was another chef just for that restaurant. And they were really amazing to me. I really credit them. And at first, I think they were like, oh, you're American. And I remember this very clearly. And I was like, but I'm from California. And I'm specifically from San Francisco. And he was like, oh my God. Welcome me like so much. Because they were, you know, at the time it wasn't great for Americans, like the perception. There was a lot of things going on, and it was just like, oh, you're American, you probably think this way.
Were there other women in the kitchen?
I was lucky and had a good experience, like at that restaurant specifically. I was definitely in other restaurants where I was harassed every day, where I was nervous. I'm just trying to do my job. There is one challenge that happens like every day at this one restaurant is you go in, you say hello to everybody, and you normally do a bees, and you're doing it to everybody who comes in. It's just to say hello. But some people would abuse that, and there were people I just didn't want to say hi, so I would like avoid these people. But it is actually really rude not to go in, to go into a restaurant and to go into work and not say hi to somebody. It's considered very impolite. But there were particular people I just like avoided because they would try to come find me in the morning. And you just don't want to be that close to somebody that you feel uncomfortable around. There are a lot of challenges, I think, for women. And it was not just that. It was working in super close quarters with people who didn't necessarily have the best intentions. I mean, I was in a couple of situations with a sous chef, and he constantly like trying to grab my chest like as he passed by. And it wasn't subtle. It was obvious. It was hard. But like when you're the only female in a kitchen, there's like no one to be like, I mean, I could talk to the servers maybe, but they're not in my same position. And all you want to do is work. And you can't because you're like.
It didn't turn you off of the industry?
You know, at the time, it was just like, this is what we have to do. And there were things that, like, if I wanted to be in the industry, like, especially in Paris, that I had to, I guess, endure. And I didn't want it to be that way, for sure. Like, one of the big issues in the kitchen, especially in Paris, that is small, like, the whole space is small, is changing. So the change out. So there's not locker rooms. There's locker rooms for guys. Like there's one room and everybody just strips down. So like when you get there, you strip down, you change into your uniform. It's a big deal. So one of the reasons why they probably don't want to hire you as a woman is like, oh, now we have to do something for you. Like what? Like, so I used to have to, for change out after service, one of my sous chefs would say, you can leave 5 minutes early, change out and be done. But that's not great because I'm not finishing my cleanup. Like, or
but
I'm
you
ending
look like
service.
You got a pass because you're a woman.
Yeah, so that's not, and everyone's not happy. Like, oh, you didn't have to wash the wall, like, because you had to go change out. Or the alternative is I change with all the guys. And they're all between, you know, like 18 and 23. And there's like 15 of them. At another place, there was another girl, actually a really well-known chef now. And she was in my small restaurant. And we would just change in front of everybody. It ended up like not being as big of a deal, but I didn't want to do that. So I would do like wear another shirt under my shirt. So like, you know, all of those things. And like, I shouldn't have to do that. There was just no privacy. And you just wouldn't say anything because it's like, well, if you're doing it, I guess I can do it. But I just learned like how to change without showing anything, which is, I mean, I guess something that you learn, and it's not great. And I'm glad it's changing.
When I visited Le Cordon Bleu, the new one last year, it was like all women.
Yes.
It was remarkable.
I went back for dinner to Septine in 2014. And I knew one of the sous chefs there, and she was great. And I walked into the kitchen, and I see Bertrand is the chef. It's an open kitchen. I was so pleased. Maybe it was just that night, because I know it's different now. It was all women. It was him and all women. I was like, that's probably a great kitchen to be in. Like that was, I was like, oh, maybe progress. I would go back. But I mean, such a short amount of time, there was progress. And that would be a kitchen I would go into. And I don't want to say I don't want to go back to any, like, if there's guys, but it makes a difference. It makes a difference when there's a female chef. The vibe is just different. You don't feel like they're making exceptions for you. One big thing, not only the changing room is, like, your locker room is, at one of the restaurants I was at, there was no place to go to the bathroom. So if you were in service, so service started at, like 6:30, so you had a chance to go to the bathroom. There was a one dining room bathroom that was like a regular bathroom, but it's in the dining room. You don't go into a fine dining room and like in your whites and go to the bathroom. You don't want to see a chef go to the bathroom, like the person cooking your meal. So I just wouldn't go. The alternative was in the back, in like the courtyard, there was a urinal. Because I was always like, what is that? And where are people going? And I was like, someone said, well, you can use it. And I was like, how do I use it without like totally stripping down?
Right.
So I just, from 6 to 1 in the morning, you just don't have an option.
But it's no surprise that so many young women who want to get into food they didn't do what you did. They created other things to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why like Instagram's so remarkable, and we've got all these sort of influencers now, these like women who make cakes and baked goods and all these things, or women who are recipe testers and developers and all of that, because they weren't like you. They didn't look at a restaurant or a kitchen and think, I can do that, because there just weren't a lot of people doing it. But you were super brave and or crazy and headstrong.
Yeah.
And just did it.
Yeah.
So thank you for doing that.
I know that it was a crazy time, and gosh, for all women leading up to the last couple of years, it's been like that. And you know, I struggle with the, maybe someone listening will say, how come you didn't say something? But
none of us did. Like I was harassed on a bunch of jobs, not kitchen jobs, but you just didn't. Like, you didn't know there was a better way. There was no one to talk to. I think it was also, you were made to feel very isolated.
Yes.
Like you were the only one that this was happening to, because women didn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was kind of, you were made to feel that you had brought this on yourself. And thank God we know better now.
Yeah. It was an interesting time, and I'm so glad that it's changing. You know, I don't know how it is in Paris, but it was very heartening to see more and more women in the kitchen. That's why Cherry Bomb is so important, to really bring this to light and to celebrate and talk with other women. Like, what's going on with you? Like, how can we change it? And now I feel much more empowered to speak about it. Like, all the restaurants, they need like options for women to change out, even if there's just one of us in there. Like, it's not acceptable. We shouldn't have to be afraid to go to work.
We'll be right back after this word. Are you daydreaming about culinary school again? Make this the year your dreams become reality with Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Study classic French culinary techniques in cuisine and patisserie as part of their exclusive 9-month Le Grand Diplôme and graduate into a world of opportunity. You also can extend your course of studies to include culinary management and dedicated internships. Le Cordon Bleu has locations in more than 20 countries around the world and located within some of the best food cities out there: London, Ottawa, Madrid, Bangkok, Tokyo, and of course, the spiritual home of cuisine and Le Cordon Bleu, Paris. Turning your daydreams into reality is closer than ever. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more and let your culinary adventure begin. And now, back to my conversation with Michelle Hernandez of Le Dix Set. So let's jump forward. Did you know you'd go back to San Francisco?
When I originally left, yes. I was like, I'm going to spend 16 months in Paris and then I'm going to come back. But I got there and I remember the first I like got out of the metro, saw the Eiffel Tower, and I was like, there's something about this place. I mean, it's obviously magical, but for me, I feel really creative. I feel like the city speaks to me. It is my place.
And I feel the same way about Paris.
I mean, part of it is it feels and looks extremely romantic. It's magical. Paris is really magical. I could have continued to stay, I think, and I'll live there probably at some point again. But I went back to San Francisco, and it was...
Now, you must have had a plan, because just based on what you've told us to date, you are not a girl who does something impulsively.
No. So my plan was... I was going to finish up my job. I was doing both the savory and the pastry at a restaurant. So I left that restaurant and I think I took like a month off. But before I left, I kind of like set up in place. I called up Gap and I was like, hey, I'm going to come back to San Francisco. You guys need any help? Like while I transition, can I do something from here and then transition back? And then I'm going to work in food. And they were so great. And so I was working for them remotely as
God,
I did my transition.
They really liked you.
Yeah.
It's like, let me just call this billion-dollar company and see if I can help out.
Yeah, see if I can help out. So I did, and I transitioned back to San Francisco. Actually, while I was in Paris, I fell in love with this guy. He came back with me. He was a French chef. He is a French chef. And when I went back to San Francisco, I was like, we can't both work in the food industry. I don't think that's going to work because San Francisco is extremely expensive. So I decided to stay on with Gap and launch my company at the same time. Yeah.
Again, of course you did.
Yes.
But that's kind of smart. I feel like it is good to have a safety net.
Yeah. And it was not even a safety net. Like I didn't have a choice. Like the reason it like launched so quickly when I came back was I started getting just so much interest. People were like, oh, you went to Cordon Bleu. Like, what can you do? What can you make? And early on, I got a big corporate order around the holidays. So I actually had to make a company like real. Like I had to get the permits and I had to get the like my LLC all set up.
So what was the vision versus what DSET became?
Honestly, at that time, I just wanted to start making all of the things that I had learned. I wanted to just start, but it wasn't
like
such as macaron. Like, I mean, there's such a hunger in San Francisco for that, like the real Parisian macaron and the tarts, not necessarily cakes. I wasn't into cakes right when I got back, because you learn in French, like pastry school, is entremets, which are like layered desserts, which are very uncommon in, at least on the West Coast. You get it if you're at a sit down restaurant, but you wouldn't buy an entremets the way you just buy an entremets like on a Wednesday night in Paris, which I love. I love like those moussey cakes and all of that. So what the feedback I got and what I heard from that is this is not a Wednesday night indulgence. Like in France, that's not an indulgence. That's like on a Wednesday. Like it's not special. I'm eating this beautiful pastry. And I still hear that now and then, now here and there, but so much in 2011, 2012, 2013, there still was not very many pastry shops. It's exploded now. I think there's still a lot of room, but people just didn't, like, it was just too special. So I had to see, like, what was, like, kind of, like, temper the market and then kind of change a little bit the style. And I came back and I definitely had this attitude of, you know, why don't they like these fancy things? And I think it was just like the timing wasn't right. And so I just have kind of like, I changed it a little bit, like the style of it. And now I'm able to change it back to what I like. And I've really grown a great clientele who is accepting of the work that I do and doesn't feel like we can't have it on a Wednesday night. But the company really has like just grown from like catering here and there and like specialty orders. And then I went into a farmer's market. Then the Nuga developed. And so I'm able to get a broader reach. So I'm here. My products are here in Murray's in New York. And then I have another place in Boston and but really all over the Bay Area. And it's just really grown. And I think I wanted a retail space so years ago. And had I gotten it, I wouldn't have refined the work that I did. I wouldn't know the market as well as I do now. It wasn't the right time. And I think now is the right time. And that's something that I'm working on. Hopefully it'll be open before the end of the year.
Oh, so exciting.
Uh-huh. So right now it's custom orders only or events. So I do pop-up events or my wholesale that you can get in different stockist shops.
So I want to talk about the things that you make and specialize in. So there's nougat, which Nuga. We would probably call nougat.
Yes. Here.
Tell us what nougat is.
Yeah. So it's a honey-based confection. I combine, right now I always have two standard sets of like our classic flavors. One is the blanc, which has organic dried mangoes, cacao nibs, and roasted almonds. And it's just like a beautiful flavor. It is really floral. I use a floral honey. And then I have another one that is chocolate, which uses Dandelion chocolate, which I'm a collaborator with.
The San Francisco chocolate company.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I use a 70% chocolate from Ecuador. And then it's black mission figs, hazelnuts, and pumpkin seeds. So it's like got this really
Sounds
rich,
so
beautiful flavor.
I haven't tried the chocolate one.
Yes,
I'm dying to.
Yes. It's really delicious. So I do that. And then I also do specialty flavors like for the holidays and then, of course, for Cherry Bomb. One of my other specialties is the Love Knot, and it is a brioche-style pastry in which I actually braid it and knot it, and it comes in, the classic flavor is the rose raspberry, but I also do like a vanilla bean and blueberry, which is delicious, and then a cacao one, which is great because it's great to temper like this sweet pastry with like real cacao.
You're into cacao. It's the second time you mentioned
it. I am into cacao. There's a whole history, you know, of cacao in Mexico, and that's part of my heritage. And that's why I love being a collaborator with a chocolate company. I get direct access to the beans and the beautiful chocolate. It's got such a rich history, and I want to bring that forward.
How are you funding your brick and mortar?
Right now, I am currently applying for a small business loan in San Francisco with a company that has funded a lot of food companies in San Francisco, and you have to be a San Francisco-based company, I believe.
You've been very patient, very deliberate, but you have such a beautiful product, and you really deserve a place.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think I'm ready.
Good. Well, like I said, whatever we can do.
Thank you.
To help on this end.
I appreciate it.
We will.
Yeah. And whenever you guys are out in San Francisco, definitely come and see me.
Oh my God. Absolutely.
Yeah. Have all the nougat.
So we do a little speed round.
I'm nervous about this because I listened to everyone's and I was like, oh, this is what my answer, but I've blanked out right now. So
who makes the best macaroons in the world?
I do.
Good answer. Most loved kitchen utensil.
Oh, it is a thing called raclette. It is a scraper. So, you know, raclette mm-hmm. is like you're scraping mm-hmm. the cheese. It is shaped like a half moon a bit, but it has got the right kind of like bounce and like flexibility. It's still hard, but it's clear. So if you throw in the dishwasher, you will lose it. It is absolutely the best. I cannot like say, like it is my friend.
Song that makes you smile.
Right now, I'm in love with this song from Dua Lipa. I don't know if that's, it's Electricity.
Who would you most like to make nougat for?
The Obamas. Oh my God. On my list is to meet Michelle. I mean, obviously Barack, but Michelle is like, she is everything.
If you were trapped on a desert island with one food celebrity, who would it be and why?
Originally, I would say Cedric Grolet. He was like named like the best pastry chef in the world just because I think that I'd have so much to learn. But really, I met Samin and I feel like
Nosrat.
Yes, we would have so much fun, but also we'd get the f*** off that island somehow. Like I think between the two of us, we could do it.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much to Michelle Hernandez of Le D Set. Be sure to check out her work online and on Instagram and maybe even order some of that nougat. Michelle, we're so excited for the next chapter in your career. Also, thank you to today's sponsors, Traeger Grills and Le Cordon Bleu Culinary Schools. Don't forget, we'd love if you could support the Hunger Doesn't Take a Break initiative from the Food Bank for New York City. Visit foodbanknyc.org for more. Radio Cherry Bomb is a production of Cherry Bomb Media. Our show is edited, engineered, and produced by Jess Seidman. Our special projects director is Lauren Page Goldstein. Our publisher is Kate Miller Spencer. And our intern is Julia Fabricant. Our theme song is All Fired Up by the band Tra La La. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hi, my name is Cheryl Day, and I'm a baker and co-owner of Back in the Day Bakery in Savannah, Georgia. Do you want to know who I think is the bomb? Nicole Rucker. She's a cookbook author and the pie queen of Los Angeles. She's an amazing self-taught baker who honed her craft through hard work and dedication. And she still blows my mind with her delicious creations.